welcome to another episode of Three Wise DMs, the podcast where three dungeon masters who've been doing this for way too long talk about all the things we do to try to make our games as good as they can be.
Hi, I'm Tony.
I'm Chris.
Big Boss Man, can't you hear me when I call? Boom, 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 boom. Big Boss Man, can't you hear me when I call? You just ain't so big. You just tall, that's all.
And then I'm just going to scat at the end.
I have no idea. Who is that?
Welcome back, everyone, to an episode of Three Wise DMs. This is the Rock and Roll DM, DM Dave. And that is, that's Big Boss Man. I am singing the, not to be confused with Big Boss Man, the 80s wrestler.
That's where my head went.
Yes, very.
Maybe that was his walk-in music.
I'm going to tell you, that is also what like Google thinks too. If you just put in Big Boss Man, you just get that dude.
I think he was the most successful Big Boss Man.
Yeah, that was the Elvis Presley edition, which most people would know, but it was actually Jimmy Reed originally. So he was like a R&B blues guy. But yeah, Big Boss Man. You ain't so big, you're just tall, that's all. Why are we singing about the Big Boss Man? Well, it's because we have a listener question from longtime friend of the show, Dr. DM himself, Jason. And this one, we had to talk about this, because this is all about a Big Boss Man. But this dude is big and tall. So it's a bit of a misnomer. So here we go. Here's the question, guys. But hello, Three Wise DMs. I come to you, purveyors of DM wisdom and wonderful world creators, looking for your opinion on a situation. So again, the tithe has been paid, because we've gotten a couple listener questions where they kind of lowballed it. And I mean, we're spending a good hour of our day talking about your question. Like, throw us a little something. Anyway.
But if you chat GPP, we will know.
Yeah, like, that's fine. I don't care if a robot writes it for you. Just give me something. But so he goes on, he said, my son is in the D&D club at his high school. He's actually been elected vice president for next year. So congratulations. And that's awesome. D&D's club in high school. The group is rather large, so they split into multiple tables each week. And he was the DM for one of them. To end the year, they decided to have an event to bring together all the different tables. It was initially pitched that each table would level the characters from their campaigns to 15, and each DM would run their table as the characters did damage to, like, a cosmic boss that was, in essence, essentially split across the tables. So each DM would lead the boss battle at their table, and the damage done would come away from a central BBEG, the Big Boss Man, tracked by the head DM. It sounded like a lot of fun, and my son was looking forward to working with the other DMs and the head DM. They planned for months trying to wrap up their individual campaigns in time for the big event. However, when the head DM finally gave them the stats for the club BBEG, my son and the other DMs were rather taken aback. It was a cosmic being who basically used the eye rays of a beholder for its weapons. That's not too bad so far, absolutely. However, they looked at its stat block and noticed that it had 130,000 hit points. Further, the head DM reversed his decision and said that he wanted to have all the characters stay at their current levels. This puts my son's table at either third or fourth level, because they were playing the new Stranger Things campaign that we actually talked about in our last episode for the Call of Cthulhu D&D mashup. Of course, my son was rather dismayed and worried about the event. He had a bunch of newer players at his table and had been really successful at getting them into D&D and creating a good time for them. He worried that they would be turned off if they were just slaughtered in this final battle. We talked about ways to deal with the situation, including talking to the head DM, obviously. This included simply reviewing the math and how impossible it would be for even 6 to 8 tables to have enough damage output for that many hit points. Again, 130,000. My son, on his own, decided to create a new character for his co-DM, which would be a level 20 healer to kind of help balance the encounter out. They eventually got the head DM to drop the hit points to something like 30,000, which I said was still very high, and eliminated one of the more challenging rays. I don't even know what the rays of this beholder with 300,000 hit points is, but, you know, anyway, we don't know that information, everyone.
It's probably antimatter.
So I was wondering how you all would handle a situation where it was clear you needed to have a talk with a DM whose ideas seemed to go too far. I can see setting up a challenge, but making it impossible doesn't really feel fun. I'm wondering how you feel about the idea that there may be times like this or similar situations in different games where you call on your experience as a DM and invoke some of that authority or similar status to make your case to another DM. That's known as throwing around your fat DM dick in the business. That wasn't in the question. That was my own. That's copyright Three Wise DMs. Look forward to hearing what you think. Please let me know if you need any other details from me. I should have asked him what these freaking beholder rays were, but we didn't. So best, Jason, Dr. DM. So Jason, yeah, if you want to send in like in response to this episode, like we could talk about the beholder rays, maybe add on
and then follow up.
Yeah, at this point, maybe they might have actually had this game, so we could get like a where are they now in Oblivion. They got blown in the sigil or something. I don't know. So yeah, there you go. Let's just go. Like we talked, Tony was moving last week and I read this question to the guys while we're driving to drop off some stuff at Goodwill. And like, I was glad I did because I couldn't stop laughing while I was reading it. I was like, that wouldn't be helpful on the show. So yeah. So we got a little bit of a lead time on this. So go ahead. What do we think about this insanity?
Well, as far as a concept goes by itself, I think it's cool. You've got multiple tables all fighting aspects of one boss.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, I have some questions about how this damage would be if it's one central target, how the damage is getting recorded in real time. That can be tuned up with perhaps they're each fighting a head of the same monster, perhaps. But before we really dissect the mechanics, like really on the top, at least for me, is to look at this and say, if you're doing this big collaborative thing, then you've really got to be collaborative with the other DMs. Maybe you are the headlining DM, but like when I do collaborations with different DMs that I have in the past, even if I was the one that's air quotes in charge, if someone, my partner or partners say, one of them says, I hate this, then I'm not going to run it. Like that, we're not doing that.
Tony, that's unreal. Just to jump in real quick, that's an excellent point. And it's exactly, just to call back to last episode too, when we talked with Elizabeth and Bonnie about running the Call of Cthulhu D&D massive one-shot, they talked the whole time about collaborating to build this story out, right?
Yeah. No, and you guys stole my first point. Yeah, like obviously collaboration, like should never. It's but I'm saying it should never reach that point that you're suddenly surprised, right? Like, and then the guy's like, oh no, here's a curveball and stuff. And I think it's also like expectation levels at the table. I don't think that all 68 tables were expecting to have to clear like whatever amount of those hit points you'd have to clear each, like 50,000 hit points at each table kind of thing. So it's just I think in many cases it's trying to create something like that out of just air doesn't necessarily work. It hasn't been play tested, right? Who's ever fought something with 130,000 hit points? I think using existing like big bads, like something like Strahd, and enhancing them a little bit works, right? But even then, you're not getting to this. This, I think, just the expectation levels is that if everyone looks at it and says this is ridiculous, then you've probably gone a little too far.
Yeah, I mean, right off the bat, like, so I think we're going to probably delve a little, but just because, Tony, you're absolutely right, like, this idea sounds awesome. Like, I would love for us to be able to build something out where, like, we brought all of these different tables together, right? Almost like this multi-worlds thing or, like,
this you Avenger know. Style.
Yeah, yeah, and it's like almost like this massive Western Marches thing that you've been doing for the whole school year, and now you've got this huge finale, and like, kudos to that. That's phenomenal. But like, the first thing I'm thinking, like, just off the bat, here's a couple of my thoughts. You got 6 to 8 tables, and you got this crazy cosmic being. Awesome. Split it into like 8 different avatars, right? Like, and then you can have like your own like special being that arises, this bad evil guy that kind of fits into your ongoing campaign, that now also delves into this world spanning thing, right? So right off the bat, you could very much build it into a that like Cannonball Run idea, like we had Race Against Time. So like as the different tables can achieve certain things, it changes the overall dynamics of the big bad evil guy, the big finale, right? But then I'm looking like they had to race to try to get up to 15th level. But then the DM pulls it back and says, just keep them at their regular level. And like Jason's son's team was like 3rd, 4th level. Like, I mean, we're not even, we're just getting to 3rd level in Tyranny of Dragons. And like, if we fought a dragon, we would just die. And that thing has 300 hit points, you know? So even if they were at 15th level, because Chris, as my last point, absolutely right. Like when we talk about like how we powered up Strahd, I powered up Vampyr. We powered up Lord Soth for the Dragonlance campaign. I went back and I kind of talk about the quote unquote real Matt Mercer effect, which is what he does with his big bad evil guys for 5e is he powers them up significantly to like 1,000, 2,000 hit points, because you can slog through that damage, because in the Vampyr battle, you guys slog through 2,000 hit points worth of boss battles as you went up. But that was like 6 to 7, like level 18, 19, 20 characters. And that's 2,000 hit points. If I multiply that by 8, that's still only 16,000. I'm still like not even halfway to the 30,000 that he dropped, right?
It's 1/8 of the 130,000. I was actually doing some math, 16-20 right. Or something need, like that. Is like, need, yeah. It's like if you split it into 8, that's...
We need so 16 more tables, guys. Yeah.
That is awesome. When I ran Chris's birthday game and we all fought Tiamat and we had 12 players, I doubled her base hit points and gave her damage resistance against most attacks. So, and that's when she's getting it. And that was really an epic battle because Tiamat gets to it.
That was 20th level characters too.
Yes. Like
full on 20th with dripping with magic items.
Like, yes. and you know, if you've played in any of my games, these guys have like the premium stuff. You're not coming to that battle with a +2 sword. That's not how that went.
No, we're going Williams and Sonoma or Pampered Chef for our kitchens in Tony's D&D game.
I'm a generous DM. What can I say? But with that said, that felt okay. Like, that didn't feel nuts. Like, I didn't roll in with a Tiamat with 20,000 hit points because she'd be hacking at her for, like, I don't know, 3.5 hours. I mean, when we fought the Albion in Thorne's campaign, we pounded on him for, like, literally 4 hours straight. You just beat the crap out of him.
At least. And that was after we had drained some resources getting to the Malbeyond. Absolutely, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and then like 4 hours later, he still had like 200 hit points left. And I'm like, oh my god. I feel like when you're running a scenario that massive, you gotta do it's gotta be a little softer. Like, I can't imagine the damage output. Beholders have death rays, disintegrate rays, petrification rays. Okay, so what happens if your guys start turning to stone? Like, what's the DC on these attacks? I shudder to think. They're like, oh yeah, here comes an incoming disintegration ray, DC 26 dex save, go. And the Paladin's like, like, he couldn't make that save, his life depended on it. So we start friggin' zeroing the players out, then this could absolutely collapse like a house of cards.
Yeah, no, and I think with these kind of things, it's like having them be 1,000, 2,000 hit points works nicely, but you use stuff like lair actions or legendary actions, and that's what makes it challenging. Like, you know, I don't know the complete mechanics of the game, but make it much more that there's environmental effects that are going on. You just don't need that, like, at a certain point, like, to your point, like the Malbeyond, it's like a hit point sponge where it's just like, there's a point where I'm like, I'm tired of whacking. Like, this doesn't feel like a legendary battle against one guy when it reaches that kind of length. But if there's other things going on, then it's challenging for the players. And it's still, it's not a, because there's a limit. Like, he has 130,000 hit points. You guys aren't even close. Like, eventually, everybody's going to be dead by the time you've gone through 67 rounds of combat to get him down to the death blow. So I think it's using other stuff like that, like all the lair actions, legendary resistance, the legendary actions, those things. As a player, you're like, ah, damn. But as you know, as they really are effective at making big bads be really big and bad, but not to the point where they're not overly hard on the players, where it's you could actually beat this guy if everything goes right.
I think that's really good point, Chris. I think so. My feel is like, I mean, because this is a high school D&D club, right? So the kids have probably been running games and stuff for, I don't know, 4-8 years, maybe something like, and that's on the outside, right? Like, they might have started when they were like kids, but I mean, probably not, because like they're probably started with like the influx of Critical Role and Stranger Things. So, you know, whatever. But it's very much a like a newer DM type of miscalculation, which is that monsters and encounters are just a bag of hit points. And like it kind of started with like third edition, especially, and then fourth, I think even more. Tony, you could speak to that. And then with fifth, it is as well. And you see that in Pathfinder as well, where to make a big boss challenging, like an ancient red dragon, you got to ramp up hit points and just make them a bag of damage soak, right? And there is a level of enjoyment to that because it allows a battle to go back and forth and there's tension. But Chris, like your point, one of the things that we did in the Dragonlance game because as we've talked about in the past, and we've done some articles and stuff on it, but I wanted to bring Lord Soth in because he's so integral to the Dragonlance world, and he doesn't really get play in the Shadow of the Dragon Queen adventure overall. He's very plot device, and I felt like it was very unfulfilling for me running it, being a Dragonlance fan as well as the people. So what I did is I definitely ramped him up, and that's the article I talk about with the real Matt Mercer effect. I think I ramped Soth to probably have like 800 hit points as a dial that I could play with. But what you guys didn't really face Soth at all. You faced the environment of the ritual room, right? And the cataclysmic fire. And that was what you were doing. Random events were happening. Monsters were happening. The cataclysmic fire would have random effects, right? As you figured out that you had to destroy the cauldron to take down the thing, Soth is Barret, blah, 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 right? It wasn't, there's a guy, go punch him, right? It's not the Thanos battle, right? So I think that was the big miscalculation. He's looking at 30 players and going, oh my God, I need a bag of hit points that could cover Minneapolis. So yeah, like it's like the dome over the city, and that's Stephen King movie.
That's awesome. Yes, Sir William was really looking for his showdown with Lord Soth at the end of that, and that was like Darth Vader was there, but there was other Sith in the way, and I couldn't get to fight him, unfortunately.
Absolutely, absolutely. But he mattered, right? Yeah, but not with there's a battle, let's just go punch for punch, right?
Fun trivia, the most hit points or MDC I ever squared up against in any gaming system was 90,000. However, I was fighting this opponent with a ton of other players. This was some divine being in Atlantis in the Palladium world. And we were bringing squadrons of transforming planes that were shooting full missile payloads at this thing. Seriously, like one.
The damage output is very different at that point, right?
Yeah. I wasn't hitting, like each plane wasn't hitting for 70 damage. That's not what was happening. It was dumping 18 missiles on one target. And then the next plane would dump 18 missiles on the target. And he'd get up and be like,
coolest thing ever. This is the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, like I could see that being like one of our like tabletop, like take our campaign onto the tabletop, and like you have units to play, and I'm moving my squad. Like that would be super fun, right? Yeah.
And that was absolutely nuts. but that's because our damage output was comparable. 90,000 was extremely high, but it was doable. All these planes had like 6 attacks each. And of course, the only problem was that it wasn't running quickly. There was a lot of die rolling, which brings me to my next point. When you're running these battles, what I recommend is that as the monster that you're playing, you want this to be smooth. Throw out an area attack. Hit everybody. Everybody's taking damage. You're all being threatened. You can't give the BBEG, even if it's one ahead of it, 8 attacks. But in the same token, you want to let your guys really crank out their best moves. Give it a lot of hit points where they can really lay into it, and it's challenging. Just not that challenging.
Oh, hell yeah. No, I think, too, one of the things like I would say is that when you're doing something like this, it's like you need to meet regularly or speak regularly with the other DMs and get an idea and stay in the loop, because it should be it shouldn't ever be a surprise like that. And I think that's one of the things. It sounds like they were meeting and stuff like that, and maybe this guy was being a little bit like secretive about who the big bad was, but that's all stuff that you just, like, when, you know, Dave, when we were collaborating on the thing, like, it's important. Like, we would just, like, text or talk over the phone about, like, hey, what about this? What about that? And you pass ideas back and forth, and you start to consider, is this too hard? Is this too soft? Because a lot of times you are in a bit of a gray zone, right? You're using something existing, but you're enhancing it out into the gray area where you're like, this is going to be cool, right? It may not kill them, and having other people there, you know, you feel like, you know, Jason Zun would have been like, oh, yeah, like your math is like way off here. And just like quickly just showed him like that. It's like, you know, we'll be playing for a week's worth of time to take this thing out, like in its entirety. So I think it's just important to have that clear line of communication when you're collaborating. And then just have a level, for my thing, expectation levels at the table. Like, it has 130,000 hit points. Like, what are they going to even do? Like, if I'm showing up with a third level character. Like, that would be, you know, I got, what, like, 30 hit points?
Get ready for some death rays.
I was like, yeah. I mean, just if I'm close to a death ray or a disintegration ray, I'm just like, you know. So that's just, I don't know, expectation levels. Like, you know, we want people to have fun at this game, right? I don't want to have everybody die.
Yeah, a couple points right there that were occurring to me, like, Chris, what you were talking about is that idea that we've talked about before, that everything you throw on the table is a prototype. You have no real idea. And that's totally okay. Like, there's no idea. Like, I'm not one to be like, oh, it has to be exactly balanced and it has to, you know, you don't want to piss off the... No, like, I'm at the point where I absolutely want to just kind of, like, throw out challenges that are challenging. And I don't have an idea of how you thread this needle. I really don't know how you do that, but I'm throwing it out there. Now, I'm not going to do like we talked about with Matt, with Tyranny. Like, you know, you're not going to literally drop a dragon on first level adventurers. Like, he was, it's meant to be used as a plot device and as a movement, right? As an inciting incident. It's never coming down and being like, yep, you got to fight me now. Like, too bad. Figure out how to thread this needle, right? But when you're talking about, like, a campaign ending thing, then, yeah, I'm going to throw stuff out that, you know, good luck, guys. Like, I'm rooting for you, but I want you to do. Because, and this goes back to an article I just read this week from Sly Flourish, the Lazy Dungeon Master, Mike Shea over there. And he was talking about some of the gamification that, like, he can always tell, like, players who have built, you know, their characters as opposed to, like, an NPC or something. I you'd have to go back to the – I'm messing up his article. But his idea was that they're going to gamify out the fun of the game, right? Because they're going to be like we talk about, like, if I'm in Call of Duty, I'm going to go buy all the guns, you know? And you're like, okay, well, like, that's – we're missing the point now of some of the gaming, right? Some of the actual, like, story, right? Because my point here is, when it comes down to it, when you're fighting something like that, that is just this damage soaking bag of hit points, you're literally on the edge of dying with a single errant blow, then everything you do every round, oh, Tony, what do you want to do now? I don't know. I'm going to do the only thing I can do that has the capacity to be the best attack. I'm not going to think through this encounter. I'm not going to use terrain. I'm not going to use the environment. I'm not going to figure out some cool way that the magic item we found in a shed in the second session somehow becomes like, holy crap, I'm going to use it like this. Wait, no, it says it does this. Oh shit. You know, like when we didn't Bonnie put like the bag of devouring over somebody's head or something like that, right? Yeah, Which is not like, it's not like some crazy thing no one's ever thought of. But the point is that if I'm going to die any possible second, I'm not going to start trying to be like, what cool things can this make a story out of, right? It's going to be my sword is the best attack. I have to use my divine smite every single time, no matter what. My character has come down to one button on the game controller, right?
So when I'm facing off against an opponent with 100,000 hit points, part of my team's breaking off with me in it, and we're going into his spaceship and getting the ultimate nullifier, because that's the only real win condition I see there. But when you're working with your other DMs, and he pitches this idea, what ideally could have happened was he's like, you got a really wild idea here, it's cool, but we had a good idea at the beginning, you've evolved it. Let's fine-tune this, right? Because there's all kinds of other aspects to this and questions. Like, for example, what if one table wipes? Then what? Are you in a situation where you could take the survivors from two tables and put them together? Like, right? Like, so you've gotten to a point in time, like, say it's been six rounds, and half of one table's down, and one half of one table's down, but one table's defeated ahead of this monster. Could the other table that's been victorious team in with a team that's taking a beating, and they work collaboratively? I mean, there's a lot of really neat possibilities there. And then, of course, how hard do you want this win condition to be? Like, how tight are you playing this? Is it possible, like, hey, we're about to graduate, and all your characters are dead. There you go. Enjoy the party.
That's my stamp of healing exploding on our Christmas game. Like, yeah. Merry Christmas, fuckface.
You're all dead. No, I think if you run it at the table, maybe got 30 players there, I don't think everyone's going to have the perfect experience. Like, you can't please everybody. But I think that thought about the other, like what you were talking about, like it's the killing floor. Like, I'm doing whatever the hell I have to do and then running here and then firing this. Like, I'm not thinking about, oh, can I drop a column on this thing or something, or use like that, the ring or the other things. And so I think it's like, leaving options other than combat in there is a good way to have that. It's like, it would be difficult with 30 players. Like, I would preface it with that, but leaving ways where that things that maybe you did previously in your campaign somehow have some relevance here and can steer things to a, where it becomes lesser combat or there's more story goals inside of a series of smaller combats, which I think is always much cooler. It's like, it's, you know, when you have like the battle, like the boss that kind of spawns several battles out of the thing, it's sort of a video game idea, right? They keep evolving, but those kind of things, because that's a much cooler thing. It gives you a little bit of a reset and gives you the opportunity to feel like you could scheme your way through this, or, you know, come up with a way to do this other than just, I got to hit him with the sword and divine smite him. Because that's, I mean, Scar, that would have been hit, like, against 130,000 hit points. It's pretty much that every time, you know. And then the whip.
Yeah, but a good example of that with Scar, though, was that, like, that was never not his character, right? Like, that was the way in which he comported in the world, right? He wasn't, you know, a paladin who's trying to use all this other stuff, you know? Like, so it wasn't, like, it didn't boil down to that because of the nature of the encounter. It boiled down to that because Scar, that was his way of doing things. He was a blunt weapon, right? To be used by Torag, right? In that way. Yeah, but it's like this, it's something from, I think, Tony, what you said earlier. You have like this finale that, like, this one battle, like, turns into like some like old anime or Dragon Ball Z like thing where like the one battle takes six seasons, you know, and it's just like one fight, and you're like, dude, like, we graduated, we can't, like, the school's not open anymore. But Chris, to your point, you know, with 30 players, it's hard, absolutely, but that's the beauty of this setup they had. They were all running, what, you know, five players, six players, four players, right, at each table. So, like, that's the beauty, is that you take these small bites of it and you can do something much, much bigger, you know. But yeah, I would say, like, exactly what we have been doing on this podcast since the beginning is DMs sitting around talking about the issues and problems and stuff and brainstorming ideas and coming up with like, oh, that is a cool way to do it. So like to begin like the answering of, and we've circled around this already, but to begin the answering of it, the answer is you do have to discuss it with the DM, but I would try, like we're talking about with the collaboration of DM and building the adventure in that way. And like, you could still be the guy who owns it and you're the right of veto, right? Or whatever. But the idea that you would say, well, what if we did X? Oh, that's a super cool idea. You know, like when I said to you, Chris, I was like, dude, we could do Secret Wars. And you went, oh. And like immediately all of our cogs started spinning at massive RPMs because we were like, holy shit, we have HeroClix figures, we have Secret Wars, we have all of these other here, blah, 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 and this thing morphed that neither one of us could have come up with or accomplished on our own. Same as last episode with that idea of splitting tables, bringing them back together, smashing systems, whatever. So like in the end, it's about, you have to have the communication, but I would say collaboratively with like the 8 DMs that all have great ideas.
So truthfully, and we had to play test, like we had an opportunity to actually play test what we're doing there, which makes a difference. It's a, like, it's a very difficult thing. And there were ideas that went back and forth where we were like, this isn't going to work. This might work and stuff like that. And so it helps to put things through the cauldron. And it's usually the better idea surfaces once you kind of bounce it off of 2 people, 3 people, that kind of thing. Sorry, Tony, go ahead.
It's all good, man. So I would kind of pitch the question to all these DMs. If we could sit down on a cafeteria table in the high school and be like, all right, guys, so what are you looking for in this encounter? What is the vibe you're looking for? You're at the end of multiple campaigns, all these players. Are you looking for something that's challenging, desperate, horrifying? What is the vibe that you're trying to really get across here? Because I was in an experience, not with anything that mass battle, but I played, ironically, in another Palladium game, where my character was building up to a battle where he's going to fight this one. He was a vampire. He was fighting this other vampire lord in single combat. And it, 18 games had transpired to build up to this. And in that moment where I was fighting him, I was getting my ass absolutely handed to me. And I'm just sitting back and thinking, and I'm like,
hey, here, you dropped your ass. Here you go. I just thought, picked this up off. Here's your ass.
Yeah. The other vampire lord had a silver tray. He's like, guess what's under here? It's your ass. That's basically how that was going.
That's like, all I envisioned when I heard when you hear your ass to you. I'm like, okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead. That was just funny. Presenting your ass.
Yeah. And I got to tell you, I did all these tricks and all this stuff, and this was really an optimized, well-thought-out character who was getting demolished. I looked like anybody who was fighting Mike Tyson in his prime. It was awful. And I remember thinking,
93 seconds.
Yeah. And it's like, out. Oh, yeah, there goes Malachi. He's down again. And I'm like, God damn it. Like, what the hell's happening? And is that what you want for your players at the end of your campaign? Because, yes, I did pull that battle out because I pulled some really deep shenanigans with some really good rolls. That may not happen for you, all right? You could have all these characters, like I was saying earlier, you could have all these characters getting wiped out. Like, you have to have, like, you know, the failure condition in there. Like, are they all just, like, off to the side and there's a victory if enough damage, there's 8 tables, if 5 of them are successful, are you collectively victorious? That's got to get nailed down too. We're going to have a lot of butthurt at graduation time.
It sounds weird. I wrote it here and it sounds weird coming up, but appropriately sized encounters, right? Doesn't necessarily mean that they're like, this is easy or something like that, but that there is a, there can be a, there, obviously there's always a, like the rolls and stuff like that can always lead to a failure condition, but that there is a win condition, that there's ways other than I hit you 1,000 times and I do all these things that I can get through it, right? You could always have like the, I always go back to like the Strahd where he would show up early and like kind of whoop on you a little bit and then leave, right? So you're not actually going against him fully. But so that's, you know, those are cool, right? Like it's cool to kick their ass a little bit, but it's appropriate, like, because otherwise it just, it, I think to Tony's point, it's like, people start to like, they want to feel heroic. It's okay to feel like, oh my God, everything matters. It's the thing. There's a point at which you just feel like this is just pointless, right? Like there's like the moon is headed for Earth and you're standing there with like your sword. You're like, all right, here we go. Like I might have a chance if I get it just right, you know? So I think there's something to say about, you know, the expectation level, the appropriately sized encounter. So make them difficult. I love a difficult encounter. I love to pile on the hit points and drop a couple people, but there's got to be a way to get through it. Otherwise, it's not a game anymore, and it's just you whooping on them a little bit, right? Like, unless they're all narcissists and they just love failing or something like that, it's important to leave that in there.
Yeah, I agree with that, Chris. I mean, to a point, obviously, because, I mean, if, like I said earlier, the how you thread this needle, we're going to find out. Right, is kind of the point. But still, you are very correct in the sense, like Thorin used to say, like, you know, we have dragons at our fingertips, right? Like in the sense that at any point you can unload. You're the DM. You can unload whatever you want. Like, but this isn't swinging around your big fat DM dick, right? Like I said earlier, like this is about you're running a game. You're making a game challenging. You're making it. You're creating the space in which people are entering in and seeing what happens, right? And that's awesome. But you know, so yeah. So like, I do like the idea, of like quote unquote, appropriately sized encounters, right? Like, I'm not gonna drop. You know, when I brought Strahd out to whoop on you guys, it was specifically to whoop on you. It was a point of. I mean, it's what they talk about in the adventure anyway. Like. Bring him out a couple times, you know, create this like, well, we got to go fight this guy because he sucks because he kept shoving my head in the toilet, right? You know, took my lunch money. Like, I have no coin for the Blood on the Vine Tavern now because he took it from me after science class, you know. And this is a high school. So, like, I would say get, like, your math teacher to come in and do a little presentation on math. You know, well, guys, if you're damage output.
It's a valuable opportunity.
Yeah, this is great. You could do some dimensional analysis and have a whole formula out. Like, if your damage output is, you know, X, Y, solve for B, you know. But, Tony, your point with the theme, right, that's really, really a good point. And it's a great jumping off point for what I was just talking about earlier, which is, like, that talking, like, a brainstorming session or sessions, really, of the DMs. Because – I don't think this was in the question, but I don't think all the tables were like playing in the same, like they weren't playing the same adventure. I don't think they were all playing their own like campaign, right? And probably in the same world maybe or whatever. And now they're bringing all of these threads together into this super epic finale, which is awesome. That's super fun, right? But yeah, like what is the theme, right? What is the story that's being told here for this finale? It's not just here's a big boss and we're going to punch him, right? Like even with Thanos, right? Who is like your classic, here's the big boss, go punch him. There was all of this story that weaved in and out that brought all of these different campaigns together for this final thing, right? So what were the other tables fighting? What were they moving towards? What mattered to them that might be reflected in this big finale that not only capstones the campaign as this world spanning thing, but caps each of their campaigns in a satisfying way. Like I said in the earlier, like you have like 6 to 8 different avatars of this cosmic being that matter to, like, because if I was throwing something against the heroes of Dragonlance or the heroes of the mist from Ravenloft, right? Or they're going for different things. Different things matter to them, right?
Well, and I think you make a good point. It's 6 or 8 different campaigns that are going on. maybe the big band that you decide on is the idea behind these are all, and now you guys finish all your campaigns with this, whatever flavor you need in Stranger Things. Maybe it's more like, right, it's the Lich, it's those kind of things. Maybe in things, it does, so it doesn't have to, we don't have to all agree on this. We agree on the idea, this is what's powering this all, right, this cosmic entity behind the actions in all of our campaigns. But they don't, I think trying to take them all and put them all together, you reach a point that you're like, I need 130,000 hit points. Oh my God, I have 30 players. And you really don't. You have 5 or 6 different campaigns running that you can provide the idea of this is your big bad, but you do with it what you want. Because you, I mean, they're all DMs themselves running campaigns. They're, you know, I think they should have some say in the flavor of it as well, because it's relevant.
No, true that. Yeah, I'm not going to tell you I was never in a campaign that totally wiped. I could think of three off the top of my head. And of those three, no, four, where we wiped. That's how the campaign ended. And out of those four, one of them was cool. One of them were like, yeah, but that was only because we were relatively low-level characters who got too ballsy and tried to do something absolutely ridiculous. And like three fifth-level characters took on like 40 different ogres in a village. And we almost won. And we all died. But the other ones, you're all murdered. You know, it's like, if you guys collectively died saving the world, that I think that's a pretty good story. But like, you just died in a battle mid-campaign. Well, that's memorable. But I don't think everyone's going to walk away going, yes! That's
not a bestseller. Yeah.
I died during a random encounter. I know, like, you know, I know what that's like. Like, oh, especially second edition, first edition D&D. Oh, you failed your save? Well, good night, Gracie. You're dead. So, and back to actually something Chris was saying real fast. You don't want to create a battle that all these people are sitting around the room, and I know it's like another side of the DM screen where, like, people are thinking, this is pointless. You're sucking the air out of your own room. So, like, are these guys going to want to play with you after this? I mean, like, yeah, you freaking catfished me in this campaign. You got me to play with you for a whole freaking semester just to cream us at the end. That was great. Thanks. That was the...
Yes, exactly. That, I think it's always about, like we keep talking about, it's collaboration and meeting. I think these kind of things, it doesn't sound like there was enough going on. If you're trying to pull together 6 tables, pull them together softly, give somebody an idea, have some level, let people handle the expectation levels at their own table. Like, I think to his point, you know, it sounded like Jason's son had a good feel for how his table was going to react to this. So let him craft his own thing off of your idea of the big bad that he can introduce into the Stranger Things campaign. I think of just trying to jam 30 people together, it'd be like at a conference, and like, we're playing D&D with 30 people here. I think it's cool, but it's right. In many ways, it was all different campaigns right together, and I think it works a little bit easier that way for something like a big bad battle.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, this has really been very, very good. The minute we got this question in, I was like, we got to do this one. But it's probably about that time now for some final thoughts on Dr. DM's question about this high school club that are bringing 6 to 8 different tables together for the end of school finale against this 130,000 hit point monstrosity. So what do we think? Some final thoughts.
Got 3. Work with your other DMs and give them a sense of agency too. Okay. They're not there to execute your will. You're not the president and they're the vice president. And even if you are, like, use them as the resources that they are. Get them invested. Let them help you. You don't know what's going on in all of these other 8 campaigns. You don't know what's the best way to balance for them. Let them, so they've been running a campaign for a whole semester. Let them handle that. Trust them to do that in a way that is cohesive in your overall theme. That makes sense. Final battle, challenging. Sure, absolutely. Make it epic. But point 3 is, you don't want a situation where it's Goku fighting Frieza on Namek, because holy crap, what did he fight him for, like 20 episodes? There was nothing like that I'd ever seen in my life. And here's the thing. That was two characters. Well, not really. Not in the beginning. Okay, a bunch of other characters fought. But ultimately, the final showdown was just Goku and Frieza fighting for like 20 more episodes. That is much more manageable than Frieza fighting, you know, 8 tables of guys for 20 episodes. Because no one wants to do that kind of math.
No, for sure. I think one of the things is using existing big bands as a baseline is a really good idea. It gives you a good idea. It lets you, like, you have a number there, and as you swell it, it starts to be like, oh, okay, this looks like I'm that. Like, I know that this is going to be challenging enough, but yet it's not just me making up numbers in the dark kind of about that. And I think also to the point, like, it's used lair actions and stuff like other than combat, leave that stuff open for people because you want to have enough hit points that it takes time, right? Like you guys say, so that it's like matters the combat, you can have some back and forth, but there's a certain point. It's like, I want to swing my sword this many times tonight. Like it's almost like an exercise where you're like, my arm's tired. Like you want to leave something more than that. People have other skills. And I think it's like that, the leaving the options open. Like if you're going to have this, give people win conditions that aren't maybe necessarily completely just hitting it enough times that you take out all the hit points. Leave other ways that you might possibly be able to do it. And then finally, with something like this, like I think what Tony said, it's like the agency of the other DMs is like, give them the idea, like, you know, like Dave said, like, let's do Secret Wars. And he's like, all right, now come up with a story. And then I can come up with a story with it. And then I would tell him, and then we would start to tie things in. And each of us having some level of agency to do the things that we were sort of tasked with helped to keep it so that we all kind of knew what was going on, but yet we could still flourish in what we were doing.
So I'm not gonna do final thoughts saying collaboration and brainstorming, because we've all said that, and we've said it, and that's really, I mean, you already knew that was kind of what we were gonna respond with, because it's the truth. You have to. That's just how it is. With that, I will say, in terms of the brainstorming, like, Three Wise DMs has literally changed each of our DM styles. That was the true for Thorin. It's true for me. It's true for Tony. It's true for Chris. As we sit around talking about this stuff, we are starting to hear other opinions. We're hearing like, yeah, I agree with that, or no, I would push back on that, what about this? And over time it literally starts to change, because you're opening yourself up to different, that's the reason that there's so many DMs out there saying, how do you run game, people like Matt Colville and Mike Shea and stuff like that, and all the live play, you're seeing different styles and you're adapting yours. So I would say, like, that's a wonderful way to do it, especially with all of these newer DMs, to really open up and really come up with some cool stuff. I would say, like, what is a challenging encounter, though, for something like this, especially a finale? Like, oftentimes, like I said, for newer DMs, we're thinking that the challenge is this big bad, the BBEG, and he's so bad, he's bad Leroy Brown. So he has a ton of hit points, or they have a ton of hit points, and they have really powerful attacks. And just like Chris said, and then it turns down into, I'm waiting 20 minutes for my turn to come around so I can say, I roll my sword, I do this, I missed, I hit, the end. And not only that, like, we didn't even talk about, like, a third level character hitting this cosmic being. Like, is that even a possibility? Like, can they even hit him outside of a critical? You know, like, outside of, like, so... Tony, you said it, you're sucking the air out of your own room, you know. A challenging encounter is when you have no idea what's happening, and it's the fog of war, and all of these different things are, this confluence is happening that you have to strategize and think tactically and use your resources properly and think of cool ways to use these. That's challenging. That's going to keep everybody super jazzed at the table and keep that energy up so you don't suck the air out. So that's pretty much it for me. Jason, thank you again for the question. As always, you always bring really, really good ones to us. But guys, we are DMs with problems. We love to help DMs with problems. So if you have a problem, question, issue, I mean, we deal with stuff even if you have 130,000 hit points and you're trying to figure out how to break it to the guy that encounter sucks. unless we're playing Palladium, because I will say the only two times Tony talked about these massive damage outputs was Palladium, which is a completely different system. So yeah, cool. Like, we could talk about a different system if we're gonna, you know, switch over. But I've been playing Hellfire Club, so I'm not really sure what I'm supposed to do with my great axe. I have above plus one, you know. So send us your questions. You can reach us at our website, 3wisedms.com. Put it in the What's Your Problem field. You can reach us by email at 3wisedms@gmail.com. And as always, you can reach to us at Facebook and Instagram. We are active on both of those platforms. One thing you could do if you have this type of encounter, and you just got to do it because this is how it's going, guys. We have 90,000 hit points that we have to get through. Then I would reach out to our affiliate link at fanrolldice.com/REF/2871. Put in the code 3WISEDMS10. That's the number 3WISEDMS, the number 10. And buy a couple like D100s. And then like that'll be your damage outputs. Because I just did like some real quick back of the envelope math here. And if we have like two D100s, like if you did full damage into 130,000 hit points, that's about 650 hits. So between all of the tables, that's about 10 to 15 per player. That's not including sneak attack damage or possible crits at times. So I think that might balance it out if you're rolling 2d100 for all your attacks. So that might be fun. So I'm sure FanRoll has some really cool ones there. So you get a pretty sweet discount if you go there and get those 2d100s. That's it. But that's going to be it for us this episode. And as we do each episode, we are going to let our dear old erstwhile leader take us out.
And thank you to all of you listening from home. We really appreciate it. If you like what you've been listening to, please smash that 5-star rating button. Let us know. Leave a good review. Tell your friends. That really helps us grow. If you'd like to hear us answer any question you have, send it to us at 3wisedms@gmail.com or go to our website, 3wisedms.com, and enter it in the What's Your Problem field. Or you can talk to us on Facebook, Instagram. We're active on all those platforms, so feel free to drop by, you know, send us a question, and we'll see if we can make it on the show. That's it for this week. We'll see you next time, 3 Wise Names.